Hi everyone, this is Ilana from South Africa. Our chapter 14 continues the difficult family situation that David finds himself in. He's missing Avshalom terribly. Yoav sees this, and as he does often, he decides to take matters into his own hands. He sends for an Isha Chachama, a wise woman of Tekoa, instructs her to come before the king with a parable. And so she duly does. Her parable is that she is a widow with two sons. The sons fought against each other in a field. The same words, by the way, that are used with Cain and Hevel when they fight against each other. The one son kills the other, and she now has to deal with the fact that her family are insisting that due punishment is meted out against the surviving son, and he is put to death. David does not rule on this, does not seem to want to rule on this. He avoids it. He says, you can go home and I'll come back to you with an answer. The woman does not accept this, and she in fact says to David, no, please will you rule? The guilt will be on me and not on the king, which is quite an interesting idea. It seems to indicate that both understand that if the king rules that the son is allowed home after being banished and should not be put to death, this in fact is not the correct judgment. The king again tries to avoid it and says, well, if anyone, you know, comes to you or says anything more, he can come to me and I'll sort him out. And again, the woman pushes him and says, please, can you rather put the judgment together? And so he does, and he says, fine, your son can live. At this point, she now begins the moral of the story, where she explains to him that if you can do this for my son, why aren't you doing it for yours? And that seems pretty straightforward in a way. However, what we understand immediately, though, is that the parable is not exact, because in her story, the two sons that are fighting each other, the murder is actually one of manslaughter and not premeditated murder, whereas we know full well that Avshalom, it was very much a premeditated murder against Amnon. So we know this, firstly, in our own understanding, but what also is interesting is that when she begins now to talk the parable through, or the moral of the story through, she meanders. She's vague. In fact, the verses are quite opaque to a large extent. It's not sure. I certainly don't understand at all a lot of what she's trying to say here. But in verse 15, I do believe there's an interesting indication as to whether she in fact had a choice about coming here to the king. She says, "Va'ata asher bati ladaber el ha-melech adoni et ha-dabar hazeh ki yir'uni ha'am." ותומר שפחתך אדברנה אל המלך, אולי יעשה המלך את דבר אמתו. And the reason I have come to say these things to my lord the king is that the people have frightened me. And your maidservant thought I should speak to you, the king. Perhaps the king will act on my plea. So it seems to me, anyway, that she is pretty much stating to the king that this wasn't her idea, that she didn't agree with it, but she's doing it because, in fact, she's been frightened. An interesting understanding as to whether this sparks something in David, the king, because at the end of her long meandering statements, the king says, is this Hayad Yoav Itach? Is Yoav in league with you on all this? And the woman says, yes, indeed, it was Yoav. And then the king turns to Yoav and says, fine, bring back Avshalom. And so Avshalom is brought back to Yerushalayim, but the king refuses to see his face. Again, perhaps something where David is trying to still keep to what he knows is right, but yet he seems unable to stand up against the woman's pleas and against Yoav and perhaps against his own better judgment. Because there's a very interesting literary anomaly that happens now. If we look at verse 24, the king orders, says to Yoav, okay, you can bring back Avshalom, but he says, Vayomer Hamelech Yisav El Beito Panai Lo Yireh. Vayisav Avshalom El Beito Panai Hamelech Lo Ra'ah. But the king said, let him go directly to his house and not present himself to me. And so Avshalom goes directly to his house, does not present himself, does not show his face to the king. At this point, there are three verses which deal with Avshalom and his beauty. And his hair, which is just placed here in a very unusual place, really, which is that, let's read the verses and let's see. In verse 25, it says, Uka Avshalom lo haya ish yafeh b'chol Yisrael halel ma'od, mikaf raglo ba'ad kad kado lo haya bo mum. No one in Israel was so admired for his beauty as was Avshalom. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, he was without blemish. Then verse 26 continues just saying that he had to cut his hair every year because it grew too heavy, and in fact his hair weighed 200 shekels, according to the Evan HaMelech, the weight of the king. And the final verse of this odd interpolation in verse 27 is, Ve'yivaldu le'avshalom shlosha banim u'bat achat u'shma tamar, ve'hi hayta isha yefat mareh. And Avshalom had three sons and a daughter whose name was Tamar, and she was beautiful. The next verse seems to return to the story. Vayeshev Avshalom b'Yerushalayim shnatayim yamim u'pnei hamelech lo ra'ah. And Avshalom lived in Yerushalayim for 2 years and didn't see the king. This is an odd interruption of the story. Just to finish off, what happens is that Avshalom runs out of patience, burns a field of Yoav in order to get his attention. And Yoav asks him why he's burnt his field. He said, well, what good am I doing here in Yerushalayim? I can't see my father. I might as well be in Geshur. And Yoav goes to David and asks him to allow Yoav back. David allows Avshalom back. And he bows down in front of the king, Vayishak HaMelech LaAvshalom, and the king officially pardons Avshalom with the kiss of peace, which was something that was accepted in those days as an official pardon. So it's interesting because Rav Amnon Bazak asks on this unusual three psukim that come into this particular chapter, he mentions that the commentators do say, well, this is going to be a precursor to the fact that Avshalom is beautiful and he's got this fantastic hair, etc., and he's a charismatic person. He's going to talk to his ability to begin a rebellion against David in the next chapter. However, if that were the case, it would be placed in the next chapter or at the beginning of the story of Avshalom's rebellion. So why is it here? Rav Bazak points out that this seems to be David's inherent weakness. His sensitivity to beauty is, after all, what began the incident with Bathsheba in the first place. His sensitivity to the beauty of his son in this case is one that weakens him when it comes to his better judgment. He makes error after error when it comes to Avshalom. Here, he allows him back. This could not have been popular in the eyes of the people. Yet again, David showing perhaps rather power instead of the absolute moral sense that he seems to have had before the incidents of Bathsheba. And later he's going to also make mistake after mistake when it comes to the war with Avshalom. So it seems to be that it is Avshalom's beauty, perhaps his family's beauty, this concept of beauty that is David's weakness, his Achilles heel, when it comes to how he's going to deal with the challenges around him, specifically when it comes to his family and when it comes to a choice between good judgment and what he feels he'd like to do. It seems that good judgment is the thing that suffers, and therefore David himself brings this upon himself and suffers in consequence. And on that sobering note, have a wonderful day.